The gentleman who's talking about the Summer Classic, Ray Ratto, joins us from CSN in San Francisco. Ray, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Now, Ray, I will say for all of our follows, people out there, one of a must follow for me anyway on Twitter. Excellent wit, and I love your caustic remarks sometimes to people. It definitely keeps me entertained. So anybody should follow you on Twitter, Ratto, at Ratto CSN. Good follow for everybody out there. Now, give me your thoughts on Derek Jeter. Where does he fit in you as far as the all-time great baseball players?
I don't think he's one of the all-time great baseball players, if you're talking about a singular skill or a set of skills. But he's a great practitioner of the game, a really smart player, always knew where to be, literally kept whatever his agendas might be out of the way of winning the game. Yeah, that sounds a little ethereal, and I don't know that he was, as good a shortstop as even Alex Rodriguez, but I think people admired the way he went about his business. A very good player, no question. First ballot, Hall of Famer, and all that. But I think if you separate his talent and his sort of professionalism, you end up with the separate parts not being as much as they are when you put them together. He was good enough for his professionalism to matter, and he was a pro enough to make his abilities reach their zenith.
You know, it's interesting. I love your description of a practitioner of the game, and a guy who got by a lot of times maybe just on sheer common sense and smarts, right? Like, he wasn't a big hitter, although 3,400 hits is very, very good. But, he was kind of a slap hitter. But it was more his fielding decisions at key times of the game, Ray. Not necessarily like his arm strength from deep in the hole.
Yeah, no, he was not a great defender. I mean, the metrics seem to, the metrics indicate that pretty clearly. And he wasn't a great hitter, but he was sort of very good at everything, including thinking the game, including putting those thoughts into practice. He would have been a borderline Hall of Famer if he didn't have that second skill, but having it makes him an easy choice.
Some people will claim that because he played in New York with the Yankees and they were overpaying for everybody and overpaying everybody else in the league, that made him look like a better player. Agree or disagree?
There are solutions to that. One is you look at his numbers and you look at his metrics year in and year out. Was he overpraised? Yeah. Was he overpraised because he played in New York? Yeah. But he was still a very, very good player. And if you want to raise the New York argument, what you're really doing is saying, well, people said he was greater than he was. Well, okay, but he's pretty damn great. So we're really talking about, gradations of reputation rather than deeds performed and not performed. I'm as devoted to the notion of the East Coast bias as anybody. But the fact is, he went to the place that drafted him. He stayed there his entire career. He helped them be better. And I don't know what else you're supposed to ask him to do, except maybe to go play in Milwaukee as a selfless act to the Midwest. And I don't know that that's his responsibility.
Ray Ratto joins us talking the Summer Classic. Of course, it goes tonight. The winner, whichever league wins anyway, gets a home field advantage. Do you think that will ever change, Ray? And the players you talk to, do they accept this rule or do they still not like it?
I think the players largely don't care because it really only affects, one team every year. And it really only affects them if the World Series goes to seven games. So in that way, it's sort of much ado about not very much at all. But it does raise an exhibition, beyond its station in life. And it really doesn't, people criticize it because it doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't. But the practical effect of it is pretty minimal. It's just, okay, well, here's something that a few of you will get to enjoy, maybe. But for the most part, it's clearly a marketing thing to try to drive interest toward the game that really otherwise wouldn't exist. I mean, it's like every other All-Star game in that the most fun of it is finding out who got on the team. And baseball even screwed that up by basically putting everybody on the team. It's sort of like this gigantic under-8 soccer team where all you have to do is show up and you get a uniform. I mean, there are going to be 81 players who can say they were All-Stars this year between the original 68 and the 13 that have been added because of injury. That's more than 10% of the players in baseball, which means it's not that compelling an achievement when you think about it. When it was 25 out of 750, you can say, oh, okay, so you're 3%. You know, that's how good you are. Now you're one of 10%. You know, well, I mean, you know, what next year? They go to 90? Do they go to 95? I mean, how many is enough? I mean, you've robbed the game of the notion that people get snubbed, because if you're not one of the best 80 players, you don't really get to complain that you should be an All-Star. That's just nuts.
No, it's true. Ray, you brought up the East Coast bias, and I definitely think there's something to it. However, it's the West Coast domination, really, in hockey. We see it in basketball. Right now, the Niners and the Seahawks, that division, a lot of people say maybe that's the best, you know, and even in the AFC or the NFC. And then right now in the National League and the American League, you've got Oakland, you've got the LA Angels, you've got the Dodgers, San Francisco. Why is the West Coast pretty much in all the sports, when the travel should be harder, they have better teams?
I think better class of people, by and large. We're just nobler. We're just kinder. We're just better people. It's cyclical. I mean, there's no reason for it except for the fact that when you get one really good team in an area, it can spur other teams to, okay, we better get good too, unless we want to get boat raced here. And the fact that the Giants and A's are good at the same time is really more coincidental than anything else. But it's not coincidental that, you know, Seattle and the Angels, you know, got better as a response to the A's. And it's not coincidental that the Dodgers got better as a response to the Giants. It's really more sort of effect than cause. Because it's not, you know, there's no real reason for it. Again, except for the first thing, which is we're just better.
Ray Ratto joins us. Ray, speaking of the Athletics and the Giants, and you know it's rare that both are that good, but Oakland got the best record in baseball right now. They went out and bucked the Billy Bean trend. They went out and got some big time pitchers rather than kind of nickel and diamond, which means very successful for them. Do you put them right now as the team to beat in all of baseball?
No, because the problem that they've got is that the Angels aren't going away, and neither is Detroit. And one of the things that baseball has done in the last few years is they've made the playoffs more of a crapshoot and less of a statement of who's the best. Because, I mean, the Angels and Mariners right now would be playing the one game play-in game, which means that a very good team is going to get eliminated, you know, in 9 innings. You know, and the next thing we see, and we've seen this the last couple of years at the A's, is that they are every bit as good as the Tigers, except the Tigers had Justin Verlander, and the A's didn't. And it's not that the A's played poorly or that they didn't get enough pitching. It's that Justin Verlander at the top of his game is a complete bear. So basically the playoffs have now been reduced to a who's got the best four-man rotation, and everything else takes a back seat to it. And the reason why they got Jeff Samardzija and Jason Hamill was so that they could be the team with the Justin Verlander character this time.
Yeah.
And you've still got to be able to, you know, A, make the playoffs, B, get home field advantage, and C, be able to play that card when it's got to be played. I mean, the Giants were sort of the template for that. They won World Series in 2010 and 2012, even though they weren't the best team, because they had the best rotation. And that just, it almost becomes an outsized benefit. You can have a very good year for 162 games with three good starters, a pretty good bullpen, and some offense. But in the postseason, the fourth starter is the one that really makes the biggest difference of all, because that's the card in your hand that everybody else doesn't have. And it sort of bends the playoffs a bit to the point where even if you win the World Series, you can say you're the best team, but you might not be. You might just have that one extra thing that everybody else didn't have, but you could be deficient in other areas. So in that way, I don't know that you could say that the A's are the team to beat any more than you could look at, say, Milwaukee or St. Louis. I think there are about 8 or 9 teams that would be in that situation, depending on when they're healthy. If they're healthy at the right time, they're, you know, they become the team to beat. Today, it's the A's, but it's not by so much that you'd want to bank on it.
Is Sabergisa, because he was named as a Cubby to the All-Star game, then he got traded, is he playing for the NL tonight?
He's not playing for either team,
okay.
And which is wrong, because he should be playing for both sides. They should basically say the fifth inning is the inning in which he pitches, and he should pitch for both teams. Baseball missed an opportunity there. No, he's going to be introduced as a National League All-Star, and he's going to go sit in the American League dugout. So figure that one out.
Okay, yeah, wow. That's very strange. And speaking of the National League, Adam Wainwright gets a start. Of course, his manager in St. Louis is the manager of the All-Star team, and you know Clayton Kershaw, who I don't think there's any argument is the best pitcher in the National League. Does it really matter getting the start, or is that just good gamesmanship by Matheny to be loyal to his guy?
Well, I mean, look, Mike Matheny is not the manager of the National League All-Stars. He's the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, and every manager will err on the side of their guy because their guy is the guy who he's going to have to live with the whole year. So you don't even want to take the chance of torquing him off. If Clayton Kershaw's upset at Mike Matheny, well, that doesn't affect Mike Matheny in the slightest. And I think everybody in baseball understands that. And to that extent, yeah, it doesn't matter. It's the way it is because it doesn't make tactical sense for it to be any other way. So I think Kershaw knew it. I think Wainwright knew it. Matheny certainly knew it. And it is the way the All-Star game has always run. If you're the manager of the team, you're going to find a way to make sure that the maximum number of your players are happy with you, because at some point they're not going to be happy with you. So why pick a fight you don't need to pick?
Do you think Kershaw is the best pitcher in the game today?
There's no question. He's very much the best pitcher in the game. And to the extent that, you know, if that translates into an All-Star game start, you can say that he got jobbed out of it. But I never think that athletes get jobbed out of an award, because that's what this is. It doesn't affect, you know, the Dodgers' ability to play in the second half. It doesn't affect Kershaw's ability to remain the best player. It's sort of victimless non-crime, I guess is the best way to put it. It is Kershaw. And it's Kershaw by, I think, a pretty sizable margin. As good as Wainwright is, if I need somebody to pitch a game for my life, it's Kershaw, and I wouldn't think twice about it.
One last one, Ray. Quickly, what'd you think of the revamped home run derby?
Just as stupid as the old unrevamped home run derby. They still have to figure out a way that players aren't standing around for 90 minutes between swings. And I don't know how they do that. And furthermore, the home run derby is like all those All-Star Game skills competitions. They stopped meaning something a long time ago, because the only real skills competition that's ever really mattered, and that was the first few years of the NBA dunk competition.
Yeah.
Because that was stuff that, you know, where you could see individual artistry at work. And once that sort of became kind of a tired cliche, they all became tired cliches. And the home run derby is there now. I mean, they're going to tweak it again next year because it still took too long to play. So they'll keep tweaking it every year. And if you have to tweak something every year, you don't have the formula right.
Ray, I appreciate it. Enjoy the Midsummer's Classic. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, stay dry.